Please be seated. Opportunity knocks. A story goes, an old story goes, of the days of knighthood, where a young squire wanted to be a knight, but tradition demanded a noble birth. One day, as his lord's caravan was ambushed, Roland fought valiantly, defending the wounded knight with unmatched courage. And the Lord, seeing his bravery, defied convention and knighted him on the battlefield, saying, "A man proves himself not by birth, but by deeds." Roland, once a lowly fellow, became a legend. Or imagine this modern day story. A struggling entrepreneur named Sarah had an innovative tech idea but lacked investors. One evening, she found herself in an elevator with a top venture capitalist. Instead of freezing, she seized the moment. "I have 30 seconds to tell you why my startup will change the industry." By the time the doors opened, the investor was intrigued, and days later, Sarah secured the funding she needed, all because she took her chance in the moment that it appeared. Here, a modern-day example. During the Second World War, Oskar Schindler, a German industrialist and a member of the Nazi Party, saw an opportunity to save Jewish lives. Initially driven by profit, he recognized the horrors of the Holocaust and decided to act. Using his factory as a front, he bribed officials and falsified records to employ and protect over 1,000 Jews. While others remained passive, Schindler risked everything, seizing the moment to do what was right. Later, of course, the movie comes out, Schindler's List. An example of somebody stepping up when the opportunity presented itself. And here we are with Esther and her opportunity. Last week, for such a moment as this, we set the stage and said, look at the circumstances that brought them there. Mordecai and Esther are descended from those who went into exile in the first round, and a group that apparently had done well prospered in exile. They're still in a very vulnerable position, but had done well. An opportunity presents itself to enter the harem, and she does just that. Mordecai learns of a plot against the king, gets the word passed on through her, and it's not celebrated as it normally would, but it's recorded, and life goes on. And now, it is 5 years later. Haman has gotten a promotion. He is an Agagite, believing that means he's a descendant of the Amalekites, and there are issues between them and the Jewish people that go way back. There's just some bad blood. And Mordecai will not kiss the ring. And that just drives Haman crazy. Maybe it's one of these, my people and your people have been feuding for years, and we know of those situations, and we're just going to keep on that feud another round. It can happen in a variety of settings. Once in interviewing was at this event, a lot of churches were there to look for pastors. Pastors were there interviewing with churches. And one from West Virginia, you know, introduced themselves, gave me their church directory. I saw there was a Hatfields in that church. And they said, yep, we are from the land of the Hatfields and McCoys. We know of those legendary feuds that continue for whatever reason. And the subsequent generations don't really know why they are feuding. This is a situation there. But he will not kiss the ring. Haman goes to the king and shares very vaguely, there's a group of people, we won't say who who just basically aren't giving you the respect. And so a decree is set up on a given day, they could be wiped out. And the king gets on with his king business, thinking it's some small people group and a very large empire. Well, Mordecai learns of this, and he grieves. He's actually by the open gate, and he's grieving, and he's very open about it. And that's the place, you know, to share a grievance. Esther gets the word. Now, at this point, they're communicating a lot through a go-between. Again, she's in the harem. There are certain protocols in place at that point. Also, it's been 5 years. Yes, he has been her guardian, her cousin, big older cousin, who has been a guardian. But there's some distance. Could just be the protocols. You just can't run over and say hey to the kinfolk like you could. Or just she's been living a different life. But they go through these protocols. And he says, okay, come on, you can make an appeal to the king. Now, she's very clear in this, that look, you only go see the king when the king asks for you. He hasn't asked for me, now, like in a month. And you go in without permission. If he's having a bad hair day, that's the end of you. Only if he would extend the golden scepter of forgiveness could you continue. This is a risk. This is a risk. I mean, I don't know when that boy's going to call for me again, basically, saying so much time has passed. She knows how it operates. She knows how she got there, because, again, bad hair day with Vashti. But then the charge comes from Mordecai back to her and said, look, your life is in danger as well. Don't think just because you are where you are that you will escape. Searches will be made, and you will lose as well. He says, deliverance will come for our people. So again, this is the book that never mentions the name of God, but there's where it infers that God will deliver us. And maybe this is why you are the queen. For such a time as this, you have attained royalty. This is your big moment. Will you seize it? And her response, again, this is the section that gets about as spiritual as Esther gets. She says, okay, for 3 days, pray and fast. Have all the people do that. Me, my maids and I, we will do the same thing. And then I will go before the king. And if I perish, I perish. I don't know what's going to happen when I go before the king. But let's pray. Again, about as spiritual as it gets. And she's called then to seize her opportunity. And we see what happens next week. But for now, focusing on the opportunity that she had. We all have moments in our lives, some big, some small, that opportunity where we have been uniquely placed to respond, to be an agent of grace. It could be something, yes, as something mission-oriented, or simply in your workplace with your fellow workers. Are you that person to whom someone can hit? Listen, maybe you needed to stay after 15 minutes to hear somebody's story. They needed to share the story. It can be big. It can be small. Recently, heard again a story. This is something on a larger scale and one that you might not think of at first. That involved the mother of Prince Philip, the grandmother of King Charles III. Alice of Battenberg, and she was called Princess Andrew. She married into the Greek royal family, and her husband was Andrew, so also known as Princess Andrew. Now, she had a very hard life. She was actually born not fully deaf, but had a hearing loss. Nobody realized it. So they thought she was slow. I called for you. You didn't come. Can't hear you. Can't come. But they just thought she was slow. Still, she learned Greek and English and German and French and could read lips in all four languages. She had a very hard life, and that's a whole nother story, but eventually marries in the Greek royal family and has daughters. And Prince Philip, well, where I was in Virginia, they would say he was their second crop. Okay, you got a bunch of kids, there's a gap, then a child, maybe two children, that's called the second crop. So the sisters are, within a very short time, the sisters marry. They marry into German nobility. Their mother is actually a great-granddaughter of Queen Victoria, connected with the British royal family, but also with some German nobility. There are a lot of German noble families. It's kind of a happy hunting ground when it comes to finding a spouse. They all marry into German nobility. All the sons-in-law get caught up in the Nazis. So, her husband's dead. He actually had left her. That's a whole other sad story. A lot of unhappiness. But eventually, around the time of the 40s, she's living in Athens. And kind of a quiet life. And then the Nazis invade. Now, because her sons-in-law were officers, and because of her German background connection, apparently there were some of the German officials came to call on her, you know, and kind of almost a polite visit. In fact, said, anything we can do for you? And the legend goes that she responded, get out of my country. You've invaded. Get out. Now, that didn't work. But anyway, she had the opportunity, presented itself, to hide some Jews. And this is a story that actually Prince William shared, that Lerny had learned more about her, that the family was hidden there. Now, there were some Gestapo folks across the street, and some things looked kind of suspicious. So they knock on the door, do some questioning. She played the deaf card. What? Did you speak up? Purposely, acting like she could not hear things. And finally, and maybe even play the, you know, batty old lady routine. I know exactly what I'm doing, but, you know, this is a card that works. Eventually, I say, okay, fine, whatever. She's doing whatever. Just not worth checking into. We got other stuff to do. And so hid. And the family, the groom was successfully hidden during the war and later honored in Israel as righteous among the Gentiles. She had that opportunity to do that. Also became a deep woman of faith and eventually started her own order of nuns. Opportunities present themselves every time. The whistleblower calls out graft at work. A church decides to embrace a mission, maybe even let go of one mission to embrace another. At our men's breakfast this morning, Paul Burns spoke about what's going on at St. Mark, opportunity presenting itself from their local high school. I think they've tried some things before, and you got to try. This one seems to work. Well, once a week, they provide a snack for the kids, and they got to answer a question, and often leads into something they can pray about for them. But a challenging talk he gave us. Sometimes believers are in countries where it's very tough for the gospel and have to make a stand or just do what they can. The opportunities present itself. This example is the oldest sermon illustration that I remember. Because it was in Charlotte. Must have been in fourth grade, and our pastor was speaking on Esther. And it stuck in my mind, he spoke of a statue. Now, I've Googled and I've not found this statue. If y'all find it, please, seriously, let me know. But talking about a statue to opportunity that existed, supposedly existed in a Greek town. We said on the front, lots of hair. But on the back was bald. Grab it while you can on the front. When it's past, it's past. And how it was even on tiptoes with winged feet. You know, the idea that here it is, it's there, But then it's gone. And it has stuck with me that X number of years later, I can still, even as I'm speaking now, see myself in my seat there in Charlotte hearing him speak about that. The opportunity was there to take it. Our first lesson, Jesus is speaking to the people. He is in Nazareth. And as was his custom, they said he is speaking. And he has this section. He read this passage from Isaiah and said, this is it. I'm here. The one that's been spoken about. I am here. They had their opportunity to pursue. Every day we have opportunities to follow Jesus in both ways, large and small, to support, to lift up, to encourage, to take a stand on an issue, or simply to be that listening ear to someone who needs it. On a regular basis, as a faith community, opportunities are presented. Here, take it. Move with it. In the days, weeks ahead, opportunity may knock at your door. Something big, something small, but it will be there. And by the grace of God, may we respond when opportunity knocks for us. Amen.